Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for Three Women, Three Ways. We're the show that talks about all sorts of issues that affect men and women. One of the issues that we're going to be talking about today is domestic violence resources and getting the word out. And I am Heather Stark, your host, and I'm kind of an academic at this point. I'm working on a PhD and working on my dissertation, and it's going slowly, but hopefully I'll get there one day. And so I really enjoy some of the academic stuff of some of the research into these issues of interpersonal violence and things that are happening in this field. And with me today, I have Victoria Throm, and she is actually a pro in this area. She is the Covington, Washington Domestic Violence Task Force co-founder, and she works with them. She's also employed by the city of Covington. She's come up with all sorts of ways to spread the word about domestic violence and what we can do. And Victoria, welcome.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. I can't wait to hear some of the things you have to say. Tell us a little bit about your background, if you would, Victoria.
Well, I'm a mother of three who the kids have all grown, and so I have grandchildren now. I have four. And I grew up in the Kitsap County area, which is across the pond from Seattle. And I am a survivor. I was in a domestic violence relationship and have since moved over to the King County area. And when I moved here, I really felt like I just kind of wanted to get away from everything and not talk about it. And so I changed my career, and I was hired by the city of Covington to do human services. And prior to that, I had gone back to college, and I was in early childhood education. So I was a director of a child care facility and worked with all kinds of kids and parents and people. And so then I've shifted into this role, and I've been here for 12 years. And eventually I saw working in human services, which some people don't quite know what that means. So to give a brief explanation, it's just helping connect people in need. So it could be homeless, it could be people that are just struggling day to day and need extra food, they need utilities, maybe they're getting a shutoff notice, it could be domestic violence victims looking for help. So in that role, I began to work with more and more victims of domestic violence, and I realized in a few years that it was time for me to move out of my comfort zone and to share my story. And then it led to me forming the Covington Domestic Violence Task Force. And at that time, there were about 8 different cities in South King County that had a domestic violence task force, and Covington did not. So it was just sort of the perfect timing. And
can you tell me, what does a city task force on domestic violence do? What's it concerned with?
Well, our biggest mission is that we promote a strong message that domestic violence has no place in our community. And we do that through collaborative leadership, some communication, education, and victim support services. And so that's basically our mission. And we're a little bit different from many task forces in that we do provide direct services to victims.
Oh, really?
We do. And a lot of task forces work more on the community response, which is really critical and very important. But I wanted ours to be beyond that, and to be able to actually help victims. And we're a small little grassroots ragtag team, but we're kind of known in the DV community as leaders, and that just really excites me, because they always say if something needs to be done, just ask Covington. And I have probably have about 8 to 10 very strong members, and then we have other people that kind of come and go. And it really depends, because we're all volunteers. I don't take a salary for directing that nonprofit. And so all the funds that we raise go to services. And to date, I'd say we've probably done over 100 bed nights for women and children. We've done numerous, you know, gas cards. We have relocated 3 victims out of state. One went to Texas, one went to Florida, and one went to New York. And we were able to help one of many partners that were able to help them relocate and get away from their abuser. And I hear from some of them from time to time, and I know they're doing well. And so that's the exciting part for me. And I also work really closely with the domestic violence agencies that serve South King County. You're going to have to excuse my voice because I have an allergy. And
oh, no.
A little bit froggy this morning.
That's okay. But this is a good time to throw out our phone number, I think. We'd love to hear from you and really would like to have you join us right now. Our phone number is 646-378-0430. If you have any questions and or if you have any experiences that you would like to share with us. Last week, Victoria, we talked with a woman who heads up a program called Housing First, which is a Gates Foundation pilot program to try and help women stay in their homes or you know, stay where they want to stay during domestic violence upheaval. A lot of women really would prefer to stay in their homes rather than ripping their children out, and you know, and but it's always a financial issue, and it can be very difficult to do so. So that she was telling us about that organization and how they're dedicated to trying to help women even with mortgage payments and things like that if they have to. And it sounded wonderful to me, absolutely wonderful, because there's enough chaos for children, especially when you go through this kind of a situation without adding removal from the home you're used to, whether it's an apartment or a house. So I'm really excited about that program. And when you mentioned services, I was thinking about that one. That's certainly a service. What, you know, a lot of people don't realize how many services there are out there. Your city and your task force provide services. There are all sorts of shelters. There's all sorts of discussion groups. And if you are looking for some way to get some help, there's a national hotline that will help direct you to the services that you are nearest to you and that fit your needs best. And that number is 1-800-799-7233. That's National DV Hotline, 1-800-799-7233. So give that a call. Victoria, we have a caller right now, and I'd like to ask them to join us, if you don't mind.
That'd be great.
Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi. Do you have something you'd like to add to our show?
I think you kind of did a lead-in just now. And I'm wondering, how do you know what's available in your community?
Well, again, that hotline number is national, but it will direct you to the nearest resources in your community. And so that's one place to start. Victoria, can you handle her question?
I'm not sure if you're calling from Washington State or outside, but actually Heather was correct, that national hotline. And then you can also go on the Internet and look for whatever state you're in. They always have, Washington State Coalition Against Domestic Violence, but they can filter you down to your local area. I deal more with South King County. And I know that there's other resources if you're in Seattle or the Northeast side. So you do want to find something that's specifically in your location. Not every city will have specific advocates or help, but they will certainly direct you to, and I'm sure most of them all work with somebody that's very close to where you are, because you want to be able to at some point meet with an advocate. So we would want
yeah.
to be vocal.
Does that help answer your question,
Yeah, like where do you start? What, you know, I guess the hotline is the first number, or I didn't know if you there's online resources or, okay.
Yeah. Are you in a crisis situation yourself?
No, I'm not. I just, these are great services, and I was just wondering how someone found out about them, how they, the community knows they're there, and then, you know, how do you make them accessible, you know, for people in need?
Okay.
You know,
well, that hotline number is kind of a central clearinghouse, and it can direct you. There are also city directories. You could start out looking in, at the directory in your city and see if they do have a DV task force. If you don't have your own personal computer that it's safe to use, you can always go to the library and use their computers for, I think, around here it's usually like 2 hours that you get on the library, on the internet for free in the library. So if that's an issue, you can go there and just Google the name of your city and state and put in DV services and see what pops up. With like Victoria, I'm in Washington State, and we also have, what is it 211, Victoria? Do you happen to know?
Yeah, I was just going to pipe in about that because not every state has the 211, but there are quite a few that do. And so you know how 911 works for emergencies? Well, 211 is similar, and it's for people that need any kind of service. So if it's mental health, if it's housing, you just don't know where to go for DV or anything, 211. It's as simple as that. And then they
I know that.
They have 24/7 call centers, and they can direct you to where you're located and what's in your community. They're just a tremendous resource. And, you know, you bring up a really good point, is that probably your average person does not know where to find help. And when we went through this great recession, there were people that had never had to use some service or ask for help, and they didn't know where to go. And especially victims that they're already in turmoil and they just don't know where to go. So it that's why we keep getting out there in the community to try to make people more aware of this issue and how to find help.
A lot of people call or go to their clergy first, and that's a great idea if you have a clergyman that is knowledgeable about community services and about what the situation is with domestic violence situations, because sometimes clergy, even though they mean the best, aren't aware of the specifics or the facts about domestic violence. And so the first thing that somebody wants to do is to be safe. So it's good, it's fine to go to your clergy as long as they understand that you need to be safe. And otherwise, the community has all sorts of services out there. And what I always recommend for people, unless they have to leave, boom, right at a moment's notice, if they're thinking that they're in an abusive situation, go ahead and seek out this assistance. It doesn't mean you have to leave right that moment. It doesn't mean you have to leave at all. But if you go and seek out some of these services and start attending support group meetings, for example, you are better prepared if and when you actually do decide to leave. They can help you through the thinking process, that transition period, so that you are best situated and have your ducks in a row if and when you do decide to leave. So, you know, I advise people not necessarily just in crisis, but who are thinking that they might, this might be abuse, this might not be the right kind of a situation for them, I suggest that they go ahead and contact an agency or an organization, start getting that help and lining it up right now so they know what they're going to be dealing with and what they are dealing with. I hope that answers your question, caller.
Thank you. It did.
Okay, good. One of the other things that I would caution people who are living with domestic violence is it's great to have that social support network, but sometimes your family doesn't understand. Sometimes your friends don't understand. In domestic violence, you get a lot of victim blaming. Like, well, why didn't you do this? Why did you do that? Da-da-da-da. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about that whole process. So friends and family can be great. They're great support. But sometimes I think if you go to organizations or support groups that understand that whole dynamic, sometimes it can be a little bit better. So thank you so much for calling in. And
thank you
appreciate
so much.
Your question. That was
thank
a good
you.
Question. Thank you.
Yeah.
Speaking about this question of where does somebody go, Victoria, you are involved in a very unique program. When we talk about services and how do you find out about these services, it kind of begs the question of, how do people find out about domestic violence in general? And there are different programs around the country and actually around the world right now that are trying to raise awareness and let people know what domestic violence is. I don't know about you. You said you have grandchildren, so I suspect that you and I are in the same generation. And 30 years ago, you didn't talk about domestic violence. It just
That's
didn't
right.
exist. And,
it was the dark secret.
Yeah, and it was perceived as something that you handle within your family. You know, it's just a marital issue. But now we have a better understanding. We have all the services out there, but there's still a lot of people who don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're involved in a particular program that helps get the word out about what is domestic violence and what people can do about it. And I love this one because, as I said, there are different programs that try and deal with this issue and help people be aware. And October is usually the month that those events occur because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually came up with a program on your own. And what is that? Can you tell us about the Purple Light Night?
Well, that Purple Light Nights campaign started as a little brainstorm of mine back, I don't even know, I think it was maybe 2007 or 8. And I it's not unique in the sense that I had seen people put out purple lights or do a tree in October. Purple, for people that don't know, purple is the symbolic color of domestic violence. And then I got to thinking, well, wouldn't that be just really awesome if we could see a whole city lit in purple? And it started with just a purple light bulb and put it in your front porch. And I thought, oh, we're going to target our little city of Covington. Well, the first year we did this, it just grew. I mean, it just blew me away. People heard about it. The radio stations were calling to do interviews. And I had several calls from the parents who, there were two sets of parents who had both lost their daughters in a domestic violence situation. And they called to thank me because my Purple Light Nights, the whole goal was to remember the victims first. And I think that's what the families deal with is it's, you know, you see a flurry of media attention and it's sort of gone. But the families go on and have to live with it. So I wanted a way to really remember them, and I thought it was a beautiful way to put a, you know, and it's so simple. A couple dollars for a light bulb, and you put it in your front porch or window, and you could remember the victims of domestic violence. And I wanted to support those who survived and also give hope to those still living with abuse. So we started that campaign, and now, a few years later, we have cities in 28 states, 3 provinces of Canada, and 18 territories of Guam that participated in Purple Light Nights. And we are so excited. Every year it just grows and grows, and I keep adding.
The trees. I think that's cool.
Well, after the first year, we decided that it would be really nice to, at least where we're located in our city, we're kind of in a shopping center area, and there's street trees that go around the complex, and there's power to them, and I thought, we need to light these trees. And so I developed a sponsorship program to businesses in our community. And for $100, they sponsor a tree. We provide the string lighting, volunteers to put them up, take them down, and they're up for the entire month of October. And now we are up to about 28 sponsors every year, and so they go around City Hall complex, they're down the main street, and we have these, you know, like a yard sign, and they're in a shape of a stop sign, and it has our logo, and it says Stop Domestic Violence on one side, and then on the other side, we always put the name of the sponsor, the business, and then a little fact about domestic violence, or it might be in memory of a victim. And so those stay at the bottom of the tree, and people are really aware. I mean, they'll be stopping me on the street if we're putting up lights and, oh, are you putting up another domestic violence tree? And they're so excited. So it's taken a long time because people first, they think of Halloween. Oh, they're putting up purple lights for Halloween. And that's why we do it at the very beginning, October 1, so it's not as confusing. And they're starting to get it. And so after, let's see, we're on our fourth year of now adding, our downtown has a holiday tree, and it was always a big celebration for Christmas. And we thought, well, let's light that for Purple Light Nights. And so our wonderful Kiwanis Club had sponsored the first year. And then since then, our city has, our Parks Department has taken that responsibility. So the maintenance crew puts up the lights because you need a lift. It's a big tree. And we do a big event to kick it off, and we have a tree lighting ceremony, and we have a band playing, and vendors like all our service groups, the Kiwanis and the Rotary and the Lions and churches, they come and kind of set up booths, and they give away free glow sticks, like purple glow sticks or cookies or popcorn, and it's just a great event. And
wow,
this year we're kind of changing it up a little. And in the last, I would say, year and a half, my heart is really, and I see this kind of in a lot of DV community agencies, we're sort of moving much more into the prevention side because we've got to stop the revolving door. And the only way you're going to do that is reach kids when they're younger and younger and tell, you know, teach them and mentor them about how you treat one another and what is a healthy dating relationship. So this year we're gearing it toward youth. It'll be a big teen event, and we have three bands that are hip-hop, heavy metal, and rock, and they'll be playing each 30-minute sets. And then we have two churches that are partnering to provide a complete barbecue. So we are thrilled. And we always have a stage trailer. So it's in one of our big parking lot of a shopping center. And they're gracious to allow us to be there. And it's in an evening this year, September 28th, 6:30 p.m. in Covington. So if anybody is in the area, we want them to come down with their families, and there'll be a lot of free giveaways and free food and great music. So we will really be targeting the youth and talking about teen dating violence.
Yeah.
And that'll kick off the whole Purple Light Nights.
Wonderful. Again, our phone number is 646-378-0430, and we're talking about services and getting the word out about domestic violence with Victoria Throm from the city of Covington, Washington. Please give us a call. Let us know about your experience, or if you have any questions, 646-378-0430. Well, Victoria, you said this is a service that's available in Guam and all sorts of places. What if somebody wants more information about this? What if they want to try and do this in their community? Who do they contact?
Well, that happens every year. And we have a website, and that website is www.purplelight, that's L-I-G-H-T, nights, nights.org. And I have a whole section on how, you know, thing that you want to click on, there's like a menu on the side of the home page, and I think it says how can I participate or how to be involved. And we have all our templates there. So to get you started, I have quite a narrative that shows what we went through, what we learned, what worked, what didn't. And I really encourage people to think about starting small and not too big, because it will grow, and I want it to be successful. So I usually encourage them to think about a plan. Do they want to do just the individual lights? Do they want to do the street trees? And I have templates that they can use for public, like a press release, where all the vendor lists, where I would recommend different vendors to get the light bulbs. And they're actually, I guess you would call it a black light, and they glow purple. Everybody kind of remembers that. And so it isn't anything particularly unusual. It's not. It's just a black light, but they glow purple. And I have a local vendor that's in Seattle that will ship anywhere into Canada, East Coast, and there's probably others. And usually I encourage people, whatever city they're from, if they can find a local vendor and help in their communities to support them, and they can get lights from them, that's great too. But so it's got a
lot of information. Do you have like tables set up for some of the different organizations during your event? How does I guess one of the things that I always think of is when I hear awareness, awareness, awareness. Awareness is great, but then what? You know, how does it promote changing it? How does the event promote change in the situation?
I would say a couple things. To be the first step in any kind of social change, and I was involved a couple of years ago with one of the representatives from Washington State, had a real passion for change, and he developed a group of people that work in all parts of the DV world and lawmakers. And so they have, as we got together and worked over a year, I realized that social change, just like, for instance, MAD, the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, or the non-smoking policy, when I grew up, it was kind of cool if you could get a, you know, drive drunk or get a DUI. It wasn't a big deal like it is now. So that took a bunch of mothers that were willing to start MAD. And slowly you began to see laws change. And then you began to see people change their behaviors. If they're going to drink, they don't drive, or they get a taxi, or it's real big in colleges, you always have a designated driver. Well, we are seeing, we're on the cusp of another social change, and that's with domestic violence. Because as you said, it has been something you didn't talk about. In some cultures, especially, I don't want to say it's ever acceptable, but it was the norm, or so you just, it was their problem, and we're moving away from that. And so as the laws tighten up and give more protection to women, and they see the purple lights, and they begin to understand what it is about, I believe that it allows victims to come forward, and I think creating a different shift in people's thinking and in their minds, so they might be more involved. If they see a neighbor that's struggling, they'll want to be involved and see how they can help her. And, you know, I wanted to, it kind of triggered a thought I had earlier with that caller. You had mentioned something about going to friends, not always family, and friends are understanding, and that is such a critical point. And we have some information, and you, people can Google this too, but we really promote how, if you have a friend or neighbor, how do you help them? And the biggest thing is you don't judge them. You listen to them. And you also said don't encourage them to leave, because that is the most critical, dangerous time for a victim. And we all seen the big news stories where the victim, sometimes her children, are killed by the ex-husband or boyfriend after they divorced or when it was exchanging children for visitation. So it's always the most critical time, and it's not always the answer to just, well, why don't you just leave? There's a multitude of reasons why they don't leave. And so you got to, and you pointed out, it's so important that they work with an advocate and develop a safety plan first. So when we say, you know, be careful about talking to family and friends, it's just, I want those people to know if they're dealing with a daughter or a friend that's going through this, to not judge them. Don't just say, well, you need to just leave, because that isn't always the right answer for right now.
It could be dangerous. I mean, what most of the women who are killed in domestic violence situations are killed when they're trying to get out. I mean, if you think of the news stories, you know, she had just filed for divorce, or, you know, she said she was going to leave or whatever, and that's when the most danger of being killed in a situation like that occurs. So I think that, you know, one of the things that you mentioned is about the need for preparation. And I think that's a really good idea. But a lot of times, I don't think women understand or get it right away that this is abuse. Because abuse can sometimes be pretty subtle. And I know a lot of people who say, well, I knew it didn't feel comfortable. I knew it wasn't, you know, didn't feel right. But I didn't know it was abuse because he didn't hit me. And
it's what you hear over and over and over again. And when I ask them, they'll just like, well, no, he never hit me. So I'm glad you brought that up. People do need to understand that there's many different forms of power and control, and it isn't always physical. It could be sexual, financial, emotional, and verbal. That's one of the, in fact, you and I both know this, the emotional and verbal abuse is far more difficult to heal and get over than physical.
Yeah.
And people don't understand but it is true.
A broken bone will heal and knit easily, but... boy, you know, that emotional abuse is just devastating. And the studies show that it actually does stay with a woman for a very long time, if not lifelong, you know, the damage that's done by that. So, yeah, it's a tricky thing. And if you go for help to somebody who doesn't understand, then you might be doing yourself a disservice and not getting the best support that you can get. So, you know, going to, you know, Aunt Susie might not be the best idea, you know, in that situation. So it's important you find out what's out there, and it's important that you find out, you know, what your choices are when you're trying to get some help. But, you know, that's easier said than done, because when you're going through that situation, it is so chaotic, and you are so doubtful of yourself and what you're doing, and everything is up in the air. That's one of the things that was so interesting about talking with Linda Olson last week about the housing, because it's like, you know, one more thing you have to worry about is, okay, now where am I going to live, and now do I have to transfer the kids' school, and that, you know, I mean, it's just a million and one things that have to be dealt with, and it can be really tough. So you need to get some real help from, you know, people who understand the kind of support you need, and, you know, that's not always Aunt Susie. So, you know, you need to try and get as much support from the community as you can. And I think that's one of the great things about these kinds of awareness programs, Victoria, is that it helps people know that there is stuff out there. There are resources out there that they can access to learn more about their situation before they make that decision. You know, you mentioned about the dangerous situation and trying to leave, that dangerous time for a woman. I was in a grocery store, actually, and a lot of people know that I do some stuff with domestic violence issues, and a woman, acquaintance, came over to me, and she said, I know you deal with this stuff, and I have a question, because she said, I have a friend who's in an abusive marriage, and she just will not leave. And I said, really? And you could just see the disgust in this woman's face when she, you know, mentioned that she wouldn't leave. And I said, really? Well, does she say why she doesn't want to leave? And this woman just kind of went, oh, she says she thinks he's going to kill her. And I said, well, believe her. Believe her. You know, that's not just her, you know, some sort of paranoia on her part. It, in fact, happens very,
yeah.
very frequently. So believe her. And this woman
yep.
was kind of taken aback that, you know, I actually said that. Yeah, believe her, you know, because you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You might.
yeah.
So,
and
you know, I think...
Victims need to know, as well as other people, when they get a protection order or restraining order, which they, you know, most often should do, that does not mean that he won't violate it. It's not a given that, okay, you're going to be protected, because that abuser could very well and often do violate that. So they
mm-hmm.
need to know that's not mean that, oh, God, I'm safe now. I mean, it is important to do, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because it's starting a process
yeah.
that will protect you later, even if he does violate it. But, yeah, I mean, it's a piece of paper. It's not an armed guard that's going around with you. So things are dangerous, and that's why whenever you deal with this, I think it's important for the general public to understand, it's a safety thing. This is all
yes.
about safety. And not just that, you know, oh, dear, this happens, isn't that terrible.
Mm-hmm.
People get killed in these situations, and it is all about being safe. That's the very first concern, safety
mm-hmm.
for the victim and her children. You know, so it's important for people, even if they're not involved in this, to understand the huge ramifications and safety
mm-hmm.
issues involved in domestic violence. And I think that's one of the benefits of having community-wide events.
Yes.
Because it does let people know that, you know what, it's not just a family, it's not just something that will get taken care of immediately as you just decide to leave. You know, that's one of my favorite things about, well, just leave. Well, sure,
yeah.
you know, it's not like a woman goes out on a date with a guy, he beats the heck out of her, and she comes home and goes, yippee, skippy,
uh-huh.
let me marry him.
Yeah.
you know, it's insidious.
Yeah, it's a slow grooming process, that's for sure.
It is. So, you know, as much as we can make that information available to
mm-hmm.
everyone, because, you know, as I said, when you're going through that situation, terrible, terrible stuff to deal with. And it's even worse when you have to deal with people who are looking down on you, thinking it's something
yeah.
that you did.
And that's why
because you're already
encourage
guilty.
People. Yes.
Yep.
So if people want to know how to help a victim, it's that. Tell them it is not their fault. There is never any excuse for violence in a relationship. And then listen, don't judge them. Let them know that there's no reason to be ashamed because, as you said, they often have that very shameful feeling. And then tell them how to get help and work with somebody that will help them with a safety plan. So those are the kind of the keys for anyone listening that might run into somebody or does know a friend or neighbor going through that. And from all of what you said, too, I think that will really help. And I think part of our campaign, too, Heather, is like our mission states that domestic violence has no place in our community. And when we first started this, we took a packet of all kinds of information to businesses, and it had how domestic violence affects your business, because people don't understand what a big problem that is for business owners. I'm talking multiple, say for instance, you have an employee who is being abused and it affects her work, and there's more laws that are becoming, talking about keeping businesses accountable that don't provide that protection for their workers when they know that they have a stalker or something. So we just felt that businesses needed to know where it hits you. Well, they go, well, why should I care? Well, because it does affect, it can affect your business. And so we had all that kind of information, and then we had a poster laminated that said, domestic violence has no place in our community, and we asked them to put them in their front windows for the month of October, and they did. Out of like 151, we only had one business owner that wouldn't take it. And this group of volunteers from a church, that was their mission to do. And 150-some businesses, and they met with every business manager or owner. And I believe that really was important. And so we wanted abusers to come around the city and go, I don't belong here, because there's everywhere they went, they were faced with this. We are saying domestic violence has no place in our community. So that was really kind of a key thing when we first started this, to get that business support. And then just the way they've rallied around us, and the city has taken a tremendous role in allowing me to do this, because it's not officially part of my job. The task force is not a commission of the city. It was certainly endorsed, and our city council loves what we do. So I'm very grateful to our city manager and our staff and our parks department for how they allow us to do this and partner with us, because it's all about having a safe community and stable homes and families.
Well, and you pointed out that, you know, this costs. You know, even if you are not particularly concerned with domestic violence because it hasn't hit you personally, it costs. It costs the community. It costs your business. It costs attendance in school. There are innumerable costs to domestic violence that we are all trying to deal with, and even though we might not know that. I've found some other activities that other communities are doing, and I thought it would be fun to share those. Our call-in number is 646-378-0430. We would love for you to give us a call, ask a question of Victoria Throm, or share your experience with us, or whatever you'd like. Call 646-378-0430 and join our conversation. Well, Victoria, one of the things that I did last night in doing my little homework was trying to find out what other communities are doing to try and get the word out about domestic violence issues. And I went to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, which is also a resource for people who are trying to learn more. And they had ideas like a ribbon campaign. Distribute purple ribbons to communities, libraries and clergy people and emergency room personnel and everything else to, you know, to do that little purple ribbon thing. Another idea was a table tent campaign, where you put, you know what a table tent is? It's one, it's just sitting on top of a table, but a small tent-shaped thing. And you print table tents with a reminder that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and also information about services and how to access them. And then you give the table tents to area restaurants and cafeterias. Have those out there. So that might be an idea.
That's a
new
one. That is a great idea I can incorporate, and I have not heard that one. That's new to me.
Yeah. They the library displays, and I know most community libraries have a big display case, and sometimes they'll put in books that are new. Sometimes they'll have kids share their collections or things like that in those glass cases. But you can also ask to have the case to be dedicated to domestic violence issues for the month of October. So you can talk to them, and the library wouldn't do the display. You would have to do it, but that's a cool idea. You can do church campaigns. Some churches will allow you to put together a flyer, and then they will mail them out. You can send flyers to all the religious institutions in your area and asking them to address that issue, either in their ministerial work or in the newsletter. You can have a children's campaign where you have children from a shelter write thank you cards with handprints or pictures and distribute them to police departments, judges, probation officers, and prosecutors in your county. I have mixed feelings about that one. I mean, everybody likes to hear and see little things from children, but I have mixed ideas about that. But it's an idea. Then they have the Clothesline Project, which I have heard of, where you get T-shirts.
It's really cool.
Yeah, so they get T-shirts, and people, either survivors or, you know, people who are involved in the movement, put a drawing or a logo or whatever on their T-shirt, and then instead of wearing them, they put them on a clothesline to depict their stories. And that's really kind of interesting, I think. I saw that done in a school once where they used it for teen dating violence. And everybody got a purple T-shirt, and they wrote their ideas on their T-shirt or drew their pictures, and then they strung the clotheslines across the gym so that whenever the kids went into the gym, they could see these different displays, you know, like big purple flags.
That's a great visual.
Yeah. Yes, it is. They also have, like, essay writing contests in schools. And then they have a wish list drive where you put posters in beauty salons and with information and literature and for every item that that somebody contributes to the work list or to the wish list, that person's name is entered in the drawing for a prize. So those are just some ideas of what you can do to get the word out, and I'm sure there are many more ideas out there. If you have an idea, give us a call, 646-378-0430. Another thing that we used to do here in the state, I don't know whether they're still doing it or not, but there are big cardboard cutouts of silhouettes. And
the Silent Witness Project. Silent Witness Initiative.
Yeah. Do they still do that here in Washington?
Oh,
you know?
Yes. It's
Well, what
do.
This is for our listeners is there's an organization that makes available a big two-dimensional cutout of a child body, a woman body, a male body, and every time somebody is killed in a domestic violence issue, another one of those purple things is donated to the organization, and then at a certain time during October, they call them silent witnesses. And one year, they took the silent witnesses down to the state capitol and put them all over the lawn so that you can see exactly how many deaths that year were attributable to domestic violence, and that's a really powerful thing. And
it's
if you're
extremely powerful.
Yeah, and if you're interested in helping with something like that, your state coalition against domestic violence, and every state has one, and in Washington State, it's the Washington Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. So every state has one, and you can contact them, see if they're doing a silent witness thing, see if you can be involved. I know it's very pricey to purchase some of those cutouts. So, you know, they are always looking for people to help fund a silhouette. You know, if you have ideas on how to make them more cheaply or, you know, whatever, if that idea appeals to you as a way of informing folks about domestic violence and especially the fatalities involved, contact your state coalition. What are some other things that people can do who want to help spread the word and help educate the community? Can you think of other things, Victoria?
Well, I know that we work with a couple youth groups from our area churches, and I have to give kudos to one particular, it's St. John the Baptist Catholic Church. Their youth group is called Teen Life or Life Teen. I always get that backwards. But they approached us. They do a fundraiser every year, and they had at some times done like for diabetes and various things, but a couple of years ago, they really wanted to have something more personal connected to the community, and they had seen our purple lights, so they came and talked to me, and they wanted to do a fundraiser for us, and those kids just blew me out of the water. They had this enormous campaign. First, it was like if anybody knows how to play Bunko, that silly dice game, they invited all their congregation, and it's a pretty big Catholic church numbers of people, and they had provided a taco bar dinner and then Bunko night, and they paid for raffle tickets. They went around and got all these donations from businesses, and they had silent auction items. They had raffle items, and those kids raised over $2,200.
Oh, wow.
And you know, we're a little grassroots, so if we have $3,000 in our our bank account were lucky. So it was enormous. It was like half our budget. And the stuff that they learned, they allowed me to come while they were doing making different purple ribbons to give away and stuff like that. And we talked about the dating violence and what they knew about it and their experience. And then they were able to really educate their people. And they had, as you walked into the facility, into their event hall, they had, speaking of silent witnesses, I have about 20 of them. And so they borrowed those, and they had the lights down, and it was called kind of the, I can't remember what they named it, but it was very emotional. You saw the silent witnesses, and each silent witness had the story of how that victim was killed on a shield on the chest of that silent witness. And so people were reading these along the way, and statistics were posted. And then they went into the Room of Hope, and it was light and bright, and it had a quilt made by one of our local DV agencies, Shelter, and the women put together their story on a piece of a quilt and then all put together. And it was such a shock and eye-opener to people that came through. They had no idea that this was going on, and people were struggling every day in our communities with domestic violence. So not only was it a good fundraiser, it was an educational piece. So don't hesitate to go to your churches and your youth group. I do a lot of speaking with our local service groups. They're a great resource, your Chamber, your Lions, your Kiwanis, all of those. Another thing that is really successful for us is we developed a bathroom flyer. You know how you go in and there'll be people selling things and you tear off numbers? Well, it was that for, we put them in the women's bathroom stall, and we put them in each stall, so that was very private. And it had a little picture of a mom and her child, and it says, "Are you experiencing any of these?" And it said, like, you know, "Is he controlling?" or da 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 da. And then, if you want to talk to somebody, call this number. And then we gave out our local DAWN, which is Domestic Abuse Women's Network. It's our local 24/7 crisis line for DV, and it had their number. And you know, we still, this has been years ago, and we replace those more than I would like to say. So we know those numbers are being taken. They're small. A woman can put them in her bra or her purse and not be afraid that somebody's going to find it. And now, this last year, we moved that project into the high schools. So we're working with a local group called Project Youth, a bunch of teenage high school kids that want to get involved in doing different things. And there was some interest to work with us, and they designed this really amazing postcard, and we laminated it, and it was geared for teen dating violence. But instead of tear-off sheets, it has, and I think it's called QR code, or I don't know what that little code is, that if you click on it with your camera, it takes you to that website. And you know that funny little symbol that you see on things? I don't know if you're familiar with that, but so most kids have cameras now, so all they have to do, instead of tearing off a number, they just click on that little code, and it will take them to loveisrespect.org, which
is
your for teens.
Yeah.
It is. So those are a couple things we've done to really get education out, and I'm trying to think of one other thing that we did was actually recommended by one of our local businesses, and they said, why don't you make an outline of a light bulb, like about 6 or 8 inches tall and in purple, and we cut them out, and when they got customers in their retail store, they would say, would you like to support the Domestic Violence Task Force, and for $1 you can put your name on this, and we put this light bulb in the window. And so they had, by the end of the month of October, they had hundreds of purple just paper light bulbs with somebody's name that had donated a dollar. So it was very easy to do. And again, it's just another message that people care and they're becoming more aware. And I like your idea of the art in you mentioned in the libraries, and I would encourage people to talk to their cities. I know in here we, most cities always have, or their community centers have monthly artists displaying, and so our Arts Commission allows us to do the month of October, and we put up all DV kind of art, and we work with our local agencies that either, like last year, we had a bunch of children's groups and that were also survivors, and the children in their artwork displayed their emotions, and that's what they use a lot in healing and therapy, art therapy for kids. And so we put that up, and it just really told a story. And then we have the silent witnesses around City Hall. So it definitely, people, it stimulates a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that I wanted to share a little bit before our time runs out completely, see, it didn't take that long to get through an hour, did it, Victoria?
No, it didn't.
Victoria, before we went on the air, Victoria was going, an hour, I'm supposed to talk, and it goes very quickly. I wanted to just emphasize exactly how important this awareness is. If you go to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence website, they have the citations for these statistics that I'm going to give you, if you are interested in learning where they came from. But 1 in 4 women will experience domestic violence in her lifetime. 1.3 million women victims of physical assault and intimate partner abuse occurs each year. 85% of domestic violence victims are women. There's a lot of press about how men are abused too, and yeah, they are, but the overwhelming predominance of domestic violence victims are female. And historically, females have been most often victimized by somebody they knew. So in other words, it's more likely for a woman to be victimized by somebody she knows than to walk down the street and be victimized by a stranger.
Yeah.
And most cases of domestic violence are never reported to the police.
Mm-hmm.
Almost one-third of females who are murdered are reported in police records are killed by an intimate partner. And in 70 to 80% of intimate partner homicides, in other words, you're being killed by an intimate partner, no matter which partner was killed, the man physically abused the woman before the murder. And you were talking about cost, Victoria? Well, the cost of intimate partner violence exceeds $5.8 billion each year, $4.1 billion of which is for direct medical and mental health services. So this is a huge issue. It's a huge problem.
It is a huge issue.
Yeah, and people are talking about it, and that's great, but we need to talk about it more. And I'm really delighted at some of these community programs that are going on. I mean, the idea that we can actually speak out about some of these things and get the community actually involved is amazing. And so I really applaud you, Victoria, for starting such a wonderful program. And you've really inspired me because our community doesn't do anything.
We're gonna fix that.
Yeah, well, you know, we sure are. Because the first thing I do after I get off the show here is to go to your website and find out how on Monday morning I can go to my city hall and say,
Oh, good.
So I've gotten some ideas here, and I hope our listeners have gotten some ideas. We were really, really glad to have you join us, Victoria, and I wish you great success this October.
Thank you.
This is the time to be thinking about an activity for October, because it does take quite a while to organize these things and to set them up, even if you have a template like Victoria offers. So now's the time to think about it and be prepared to really make a difference in October. You know, Victoria, one of the things that we usually do finishing our show is to talk about a quote or to have a quote about what we talked about. And the one that I found today I thought would give us some thought. It is from John F. Kennedy. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. So
that's incredible.
And I think that that applies to the domestic violence issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if we don't have that peaceful revolution, the violence will be inevitable. Victoria Brum, mm-hmm. thank you so much for joining us today. I enjoyed our conversation, and I learned quite a bit.
Yeah, this was wonderful. Yes,
okay,
I just wanted to...
Three Women, Three Ways, and thank you for joining us. Come again next week when we'll be talking about raising children in a violent world. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather.